Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, On the Street Inc., and Psychological Productions proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. King Baby Duck here. So how about that PAX East badge clusterfuck launch? Thousands upon thousands of gamers jumping on Wednesday at noon, practically breaking the site and creating all sorts of chaos for those trying to score a three-day pass. And in less than an hour, they were gone, with some showing up on eBay for around either $200 or even $2,000. It's beyond crazy what people will have to do to get into the event. And the hotel booking was even worse. I spent almost 3 hours trying to get a room and almost gave up. I know I live in the Boston area, but I find that it's a lot easier to just have a hotel near the event than going back and forth from the North Shore. It might sound silly, but with everything that I'd be bringing to the convention, like my computer and recording equipment, it's such a hassle carrying everything. But thanks to our good friend DJ Ranma Satome from Anime Jam Sessions, we managed to get an amazing room. And in a great situation. So much props once again to Mr. DJ Ranma Satome. He is a badass amongst badasses. And I am looking forward to seeing what's in store at this year's event. Even if the badge and hotel situation was a little screwy. Okay, really screwy. It doesn't take away from the fact that it's going to be a fun weekend. And it's good, too, that PAX is going to be canceling any of the badges that are being put onto eBay, so long as they don't accidentally cancel those who bought in bulk for their friends, not to make a profit. So for those who are still trying everything they can to get in, my simple advice is to just not give up hope. I know it's a little cheesy, but that's all I can really say. Anyways, let's get things rolling. Remember, if you like what you hear and if you want to support these artists, please buy their music and various other works. And you can find just about all these releases on cgjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record stores. Why don't we start off with some Shonen Knight? Here is a little track from the 1997 album, Brand New Knight. It's called Frog Phobia.
しよう。 ロキョロ何が大丈夫だって教えてほしい。帰る恐怖症から抜け出して、帰る恐怖症を克服しよう。何でも恐怖症って抱える恐怖症、
could it be that I'm just old and horny? Could it be that?
The Seatbelts with Diggin' from the Future Blues OST album, the soundtrack to the Cowboy Bebop movie, Knockin' on Heaven's Door. That's why I got into Yoko Kanno's. Her soundtracks just sound like great albums that can be separated with ease from their anime counterparts. You can play it at a party, and people won't even know that it's an anime soundtrack. They just think it's a great album in general. It's almost Halloween, and no October 31st can be considered complete without a viewing of the Evil Dead movies, the original trilogy, and the surprisingly great remake that came out this year. Now, I was a late bloomer to the series, and I probably didn't watch it until around 2006, but I instantly fell in love with the characters, the stories, the scares, and even the humor. For the last few years, more and more rumors have been coming out regarding a new Ash-based Evil Dead film, with the news reappearing this past March. At Nashville's Wizard World Comic Con this past week, the man himself, Bruce Campbell, practically confirmed it was happening. From what I've been hearing around the grapevine, the film will in fact be Army of Darkness 2, while the remake series will continue with Evil Dead 2. Then, and this is where it gets the most interesting, both Ash and Mia, will be in the seventh and possibly final Evil Dead movie, with their narratives combined to make one hopefully epic movie. I am curious to see how the tone of the film itself will be like, as the original series went more for a humorous approach, whereas the reboot series is more serious. I bet they'll find a way to meet in the middle, so I'm crossing my fingers that we'll be reading more from the Necronomicon in the not-so-distant future. Nick Cave has had a busy past couple years, from writing the film Lawless to making new music with his Mad Seeds band and Grinder Man. Here's a track from the double album Avatar Blues, Mirror of Orpheus, It's Supernatural.
Through the windswept coastal trees, where the dead come rising from the sea, with a teddy bear clamped between her knees, she says, where can my lover man be? Well, I'm down here, babe, with the Eskimos, with the polar bears and the Arctic snow, where the party of penguins are who do not know how I can get back to thee. Well, I'm gonna ask you, babe. Hey! Ho! Oh, baby, don't you go. Hey! Ho! Oh, no, no, no. Hey! Ho! Oh, baby, don't you go. Oh, supernatural on me. Supernaturally. Once I was your heart's desire, now I am the ape hunkered by the fire, oh, with my knuckles dragging through the mire. You float by so majestically. You're my north, my south, my east, my west. Oh, well, you are the girl that I love best. Oh, well, an army of tanks bursting from your chest. I wave my little white flag at thee. Well, can you see it, babe? Yeah, hey, ho! Oh, baby, don't you go, hey! Supernatural on me, supernaturally. Now I've turned the mirrors to the wall, and I've emptied out the people halls. man of mail, shut the windows and I've locked the doors. There is no escape, you see. And I chase you up and down the stairs. Well, under tables and over chairs. Well, I reach out and I touch your hair, but it cuts me like a knife. For there is always some little thing you've got to do. Hey! Ho! Oh, baby, don't go. Hey! Ho! Well, baby, no, no, no. Oh, supernatural on me, supernatural. Oh, hey, oh, hey,
oh, I love it, I know you.
Kitade was Suniraku, a B-side from her Suicide's Love Story single. And joining me right now are my two buddies from the Region 2 show, Miss Fifi Prosper and King Sparkaleptic.
Hey! How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Good, good. It's always awesome chatting with you.
Yeah, it's always awesome chatting with you guys as well. So I figured I asked these guys if they had seen the new movie Gravity, directed by Alfonso Cuarón. Unfortunately, they have. So I figured, why don't we bring these guys in and we can chat about the film and see if we liked it, if we hated it, what we did like about it, what we did hate about it, and figured just go from there.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. So the movie Gravity, it stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, and it's about two astronauts who are trying to get back to Earth after debris from a blown-up Russian satellite destroys their rocket ship, and they have to get to, what is it, the Chinese space station, or...
They have to jump from one station to the next.
And basically, just to keep it as spoiler-free as possible, it's just like how you introduced it. It's basically a movie about these two astronauts trying to find their way back home. That's ultimately the core of the story. And then it's just the everything around it and how Alfonso Cuarón really expresses and displays space for us as a viewer.
Wow, what a depiction of space, though. Like, I absolutely loved it.
Absolutely.
I think it's one of, I think it's, other than some of like the gravity techniques of some of like the hair and such, this is like one of the most realistic portrayals of space. Like when you, like it's true that when you're out in space, there's no sound. So when something blows up, you don't hear it. And yeah. I'm glad to actually see a movie do that for once. Because I remember watching like Apollo 13 and you would hear all the explosions happening in space.
Absolutely. These are all Hollywood movies. I mean, when it comes to me, in regards to space operas or movies based in space, the last movie that I recall that featured this whole void and no sound within space is 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
And fantastic that Alfonso Cuarón was able to bring that spirit back and really make you feel how you would react as someone trapped in space.
Yeah, like the emptiness. Like
the void. The lack of control. The perpetual motion, where if you're stuck in space floating away, you're perpetually floating with nothing to stop you. And that's really a scary sensation that the director really succeeded in pulling off, I believe.
Absolutely.
And it's true. Like, it gives you a more sense that this isn't just a sci-fi film. It's also got a horror aspect to it as well, because these two astronauts are alone. They have no communication. And they have very limited oxygen, and they need to do everything they can to try to get home. But everything that keeps being thrown at them, like every 90 minutes, debris keeps coming back and trying to, well, not trying to kill them, but, you know, yes. It doesn't have a mind of its own.
Absolutely.
There's a really impending sense of urgency that's constantly, it's an underlying theme during the whole movie, this whole sense of survival and urgency. And just it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I remember when I was watching it in the cinemas, like, I felt that I was really, like, my heart was in my guts, you know? And I'm like, I wanted them to get past it, you know? Like, I wanted certain scenes to be done already because I can't imagine what it must feel like, you know? Like, there's one scene in particular where, like, Sandra Bullock is, like, floating through space. She's spitting. And she's, like, going further and further away. Like,
we were both choking. We were both holding to our breath. And we were suffocating.
You stop breathing.
Because it was really perfectly simulated. And it made me feel, if this is exactly how I'd react to it. If I was perpetually floating in space and no one is hearing me and I can't talk to anyone, I'd lose my mind.
Yeah, and it's a sort of sense of realism that you don't really see in a lot of these sci-fi films.
Absolutely. So it's really fantastic. And, you know, the funny thing is, Alfonso Cuarón, I'm not sure if you're experienced with his work. He's done sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
His last sci-fi approach was Children of Men. Have you watched that movie?
Oh, my God. Children of Men is such a fantastic movie. I love Michael Caine in that film.
The movie's really great. And so when Cuarón took his knowledge of sci-fi and took it to space, though he did a great job, He let out a press release, or he openly said this is the last time he will ever do a space movie because it took them so much work, took them so much effort, and you can see it from the movie.
It demanded so much perfection that I don't think they were I don't think it was he anticipated it in the beginning, like all those scenes that he had to
challenges pull it off.
Yeah.
Really, for your listeners who haven't watched the movie, it's a must-watch. Gravity is one of the standout movies of the year, if not the last few years. specifically in regards to sci-fi movies. Really,
I cannot agree more. It's one of those films that practically like rewrites the book of how a sci-fi movie in space should be done. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love Star Wars movies. I love the Star Trek films, but there's no realism whatsoever in those films. You're hearing the lasers being shot out in space, the rockets, and that won't happen in real life. Death Star explodes in A New Hope, if that happened in real life, you would hear nothing.
It would be very anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Like, I love how there was a certain sense of realism in the movie too. Like, all we see in movies in space is, like you said, like the awesomeness that is Star Wars or Star Trek. But you never see what happens if you know, things go wrong and things don't go as planned.
And not only that, I'll tell you what, if it does one thing, you know how when you were a child, you'd watch all these movies and say, oh, wow, I want to be an astronaut.
Movie tells you don't be an astronaut.
Yeah, well, this is the movie that shows you, no, you do not want to be an astronaut. This is what these people go through. It's not a joke.
I heard the theory of one satellite hitting the next is actually a real theory, and it's called I'm trying to find it somewhere on the internet.
I think it's like a gravitational pull theory.
Yeah, it's like the butterfly effect. One thing leads to another, and then it becomes this permanent thing around there. And I believe it actually, I'm sure they've done so much research for this movie. I don't think they're going to create something that's fictitious. Go ahead. Sorry.
What I would love to see though is the perspective from this film. From the Russians who blew up the space state, that satellite in the first place. They're going, oh God, we fucked up bad. Oh no.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, really, really phenomenal movie. I did not, in all honesty, I was dreading to watch it because these days I find myself that I can't do too much stress. And I figured Gravity is all about stress. It's a movie that's meant to stress you out. Well, and so I had my defenses up, but when I went in to watch it, I did stress out completely, but I got so much more in return in regards to storytelling, directing, aesthetically, a beautiful movie. Really should not be missed out.
Absolutely. And I just finally found it. When that happens, where like space debris is like hitting each other and it causing like a catastrophic event, that's actually called the Kessler syndrome.
Oh.
It exists.
Well, yeah, they've done all the research, of course.
It's actually something real. It's a theory from 1978, apparently.
Interesting. Now, I'll be perfectly honest with you guys, because when I first saw the trailer, it was the one long shot one of like George Clooney and Sandra Bullock trying to grab onto the space station. The way it was shown off, I gotta be honest with you, it looked silly to me. It looked like if you silenced it, put the Benny Hill theme song in the background, and added wacky sound effects, it would become a comedy.
I can't agree with you because I'll tell you what, though, as stunning as the movie is from an artistic perspective and from performance, you still can't avoid some camp dialogue taking place. Ultimately, it's still a Hollywood movie, and you still have this sense of there's a certain, you know, sometimes when you're watching a great movie and then an absurd scene comes in that just makes no sense in the element of the movie. But you kind of feel that it was forced so they could approach all sorts of audiences. You can't avoid these moments. There are going to be these moments that will make you say, ah, come on.
Or when they, or for example, when they
no spoilers.
No, of course. Yeah. When they spoon feed you a bit of information that you really like, you got.
Yes.
But you didn't really need the spoon in your mouth, you know, to understand.
So
what
it kind of exactly breaks away the character of astronauts. I mean, you know what the, you know what.
I do agree with you to some extent, but I feel like maybe some of the dialogue in the film, the small talk, was trying to showcase the two astronauts keeping each other sane during this time of crisis.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. What I meant to say is there are certain moments only, and I by no means am I saying the whole dialogue is like this. Absolutely not. In the majority of it, it's a fantastically written story. It's just there are certain moments that just pushed me away from it and made me feel that I am no longer in space. I'm actually with two people sharing a sentimental moment. And or you know, I don't want to diverge too much into the details. It's just there are certain moments of the movie that kind of where I was detached from the movie.
It's a Hollywood movie at the end. Like, yeah. You can expect something like
that. But yeah, really, compared to other Hollywood movies I watched, this is absolutely standout. I mean, there were only like 5% of the movie was this way. 95% was pure awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Agreed. And that's how I felt about the film. Because, you know, there were a couple areas where I did find it to be a little bit laughable. But then you forget those moments as soon as you see more of the serious aspects of Gravity happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
So, yeah, definitely a must watch.
Yeah.
So, a rating between 0 to 5, what would you guys give this film?
I'll say 4.5.
Yeah,
and I watch it again. It has a.
I can't do
a rerun session. Factor.
My heart will stop while I watch it again. definitely an easy 4. It'd be unfair to score it anything less than a 4. It's a really fast. Even I didn't go as far as to teach it to the 4.5.
Yeah, I would say 4.5.
I would actually agree with you. I would say if I could like give it a 4.25. Like it is one of the best films I've seen this year so far, but it's not the absolute best movie I've seen.
No.
It was nice. It was nice movie technique. Like it was nice movie making techniques. But like other than that, like it definitely deserves. You know, it's definitely not the top out there, but it's definitely, like, awesome.
I totally agree with you. It's a great film. Mm-hmm. I feel like the hype is well-deserved. And did you guys go see it in 3D, by the way?
Yes, we did.
See it in, absolutely. It's a must in 3D. You just get lost in this outer space.
And not only the outer space, the smart use of lens flares with 3D. So it really makes you feel you're inside. There are certain shots in the movie, if you remember, where it's a point of view. And they make you feel like you're inside the astronaut costume or the wardrobe. Mm-hmm. And the use of the lens flare with the 3D was really phenomenal. It made me feel like I am inside that suit. So really fantastic work.
We are Sandra Bullock.
And I wonder too. I wonder how many takes it really was for those like really long shots. Like the opening scene in Gravity was like one like 15-minute one shot.
Wow.
Period. Like, I'm wondering how much of that really was a one shot.
Well, I'll tell you what, there weren't any 15-minute one shots, one takes. The scene was in total 15 minutes with only minimal conversation taking place, but it's not one take. You notice a lot of camera cuts, so they didn't really take one whole 15 minutes without any stops or cuts. There were multiple angle switches, so the actors obviously would have readjusted and worked it out. But to be able to deliver that same impact, including. Really, it's a phenomenal effort, standout phenomenal effort to really pull it off, make it this believable, this close to reality in a very scary manner. So really, it's directorially, I think Alfonso Cuarón really did an excellent job. And I'm not surprised that I'm saddened that he's not going to do any more space movies, but I'm not surprised because really, you can see the work.
It's like, where can you go from here?
Yeah, and it's excellent that like, this was his last space movie. You know, like hats off.
So at least he pulled up.
Yeah.
So when award season comes in, do you think it has a chance at capturing a couple of statues?
I think so. In terms of like art, in terms of art direction, and in terms of like movie making techniques, like
cinematography, maybe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to get cinematography and I wanted to get sound design. I would love for it to get those. But knowing how the industry works, I have my fingers, my feet, everything crossed.
So I guess maybe we should look back at it and see what happens when comes time for Golden Globes and Oscars. So
absolutely. That would be great. That's a great recap.
So Gravity in theaters right now. Do check it out. Fifi Sparkleptic, thank you so much for joining me here at No Borders, No Race. You could check out, was it region2show.com?
Yes. You can check out, well, we're doing a lot of things right now. We've been on hiatus for a short while, but yes, you can check us out on region2show.com, and you can check out our YouTube channel as well. We have all sorts of reviews over there taking place and video game reports.
Excellent. And listeners, do check them out. They're a great bunch of people doing some awesome videos and some great articles. One of the smartest people in the room, honestly.
Thank you. Much love. Thank you so much.
Much love.
Same all the way back to you.
Yes. All right. Here's J-Pop doing Pump for the track from their 2009 album, Bring It. This is Yole. Psycho from her 2010 Mayhem release. I love her jazz and rockabilly mashed up style. She's reportedly working on her next album, which should hopefully be out sometime next year. How do I talk about the excitement for my Red Sox without the fear of jinxing myself and the team? We're the American League champions, and we stand a good chance of winning it all against the St. Louis Cardinals, but I can't for the love of me say that we're going to totally win. That's not how I roll, mainly because of how superstitious I get when it comes to sports in general. I don't treat anything else with this much crazy voodoo shit. But when it's with the Sox, Celtics, Bruins, and Patriots on the line, I have to do everything I can to make sure that we don't get fucked over in the end. And the thing that always winds up killing our chances is, and this is going to sound really crazy, it's sheer optimism. Whenever an inkling of cockiness likes to peer its head in, that's when we lose. I always treat my sports teams like a goth kid treats life. That it's all downhill no matter what the circumstances are. Say the Celtics are playing, we could be ahead like 87-53, and it'd be like 5 minutes after the game. There's still going to be that pessimistic side to be like, they can still lose this. It's like pessimism is the key to victory when it comes to Boston sports teams, specifically for the fans and not the players. The more we think we're going to lose, the less likely we will. What I mean by that is, it's not so much as you need to say that you think you're going to lose. You really need to believe that deep down you're going to lose that game. That's how I treated the Pats in their Super Bowl appearances, how I treated the Red Sox in their 2004 and 2007 World Series appearances, the Celtics in the 2008 NBA Championship, and the Bruins in the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals. So for all you Boston sports fans, remember that a pessimistic attitude will bring your teams towards optimistic achievement. And as I say this, this is Friday when I'm recording it. We are currently 1-1, so it's still anybody's game. I hope something good happens for the Red Sox this year. Or do I not want to say that in fear of jinxing us? I don't want to talk anymore because the more I think about it, the more I fear the worst. One of the first bands I got into from Japan were Noodles. I heard of them because I saw them open up for the Pillows back in 2005 and instantly fell in love with them. This is the opening track from their 2003 album, God Cable. It's called She, Her. I'm
temperatures rising. Every minute I spend vibing. 言葉で説明できないくらい She's so right. 気分が high. 自分の eyes で世界どこ探しても大気圏越えた空の向こう行っても Never ever, 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 ever will I find someone like you. I never knew
Hello, 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 hello.
I never knewShe wants me now, yeah. She said something like she needs me now. Hear me now. はっきり聞き取れてない。爆音に埋もれた雰囲気さ。でも空気でわかるなんとなく、なんとなく超ホットnow.
To see them release a new album so quickly, as the duo's known for taking a couple years off in between releases, but no complaints here. The more M-Flow, the better. And right now, I am being joined by my friend 42 Believer.
Hello!
And today, we're going to be talking about a brand new anime series that had just come out. It's available to watch on Crunchyroll called Golden Time.
And it is golden. It's just so cute and adorable.
Although if they had called it Golden Years, it could have, you know, taken an opportunity to use the David Bowie song, but I won't complain about that.
Yeah, there might be some licensing issues.
True. And I gotta say, before we get to, like, the main thing about the anime, I'm just glad that it's an anime that takes place in college for once, instead of something that's, like, taking place in middle school or high school like most anime series do.
I know, it was really jarring. I'm like, whoa, anime about college. That doesn't happen every day.
No, I think the last time I can recall an anime that did take place in college was Honey and Clover, and that was back in 2006.
It's been a long time. And it's so far, it's a really good, you know, representation of college life.
Well, college life in Japan, I mean, I don't know why, but every time I see college life in Japan, I wish that...we had that sort of thing happening in America, because I don't remember, like, the groups and clubs meetings being this cuckoo crazy and awesome.
Oh, you don't? I oh my gosh, my first day in college is just like bombarded by come join this club. No, come join this club. No, come join this sport. No, you should join this sport. No, we will suck you in like the devil.
Salem State had more of the groups and clubs fair. Everything was nicely organized and professional.
Well, see, my college is so small. I mean, there's 350 people, so when, you know, if they don't have enough club members, then they can't have the club, so everyone's desperate to get members.
Yes.
So I really liked how it just spoke to me on that level.
Alright, but let's get into the premise of the show, which was about a guy named Tana who befriends a guy named Mitsuo, and all of a sudden, this girl named Kaga appears out of nowhere and slaps Mitsuo in the face with flowers.
Yeah, pretty badass opening for a character. I'm like, nice introduction. I like her already.
So it turns out this girl, Kaga, has been childhood friends and presumably the girlfriend of Mitsuo since they were, you know, very young. And
yep.
Tana becomes friends with Mitsuo, but becomes a little bit closer friends with Kaga, because Mitsuo is kind of avoiding Kaga because of how, would you say, controlling she could be?
Controlling, overbearing, clingy, it looked like, maybe a bit stalkerish at times, with the whole taking photos of him, that was a little stalkerish.
I did like the scene where they were where Mitsuo and Tana were going back and forth between their perspective of Kaga. It was like, oh, Kaga seemed to be like, oh, congratulations, teehee. And then Mitsuo was like, no, this is Kaga. Mitsuo, go blah, 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 blah.
I love that scene. That was in the first episode, and that was just so perfect because they didn't even they let it go for a few jokes, and you could just see her in the background, but they didn't really draw attention to it.
I was yelling at the TV. It was like, Mitsuo, you might want to shut up right now.
She's right behind you. It's a trap. But, I mean, I think it was kind of obvious that she was going to come to their college. So I was like, Mitsuo, you're kind of an idiot. Obviously, she would switch colleges. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty obvious. But I just love the humor in it. And I really liked how they're developing, like, almost like a friendly relationship between Tada and Kaga.
Yep.
Because, you know, you see her and she admits, yeah, I was trying to use sympathy to get you to be my friend because no one talks to me. And that's really sad on the one hand, but then you just see him, even though he knows she might be doing that, you see him trying to make friends with her anyway. And that's just really sweet.
Right, because he feels bad for her because everybody's like, oh my gosh, she's so sexy. She looks like a movie star. Look at the clothes she's wearing. She's way above us. Why bother talking to her?
Yeah, like she'll just brush us off because she's obviously snobby. And I'm like, no, she's a nice person. But the quick question though, what did you think about that like weird cult twist in episode 3?
You see, okay. So my thoughts on this are, okay, it's pretty cool that they're introducing this sort of thing in an episode, but they didn't do it in a comedic fashion, which is what really threw me off. Like, whenever you see an anime and it deals with a little bit of a cult instead of comedy, you've got the really crazy people, you know, going like, Bentora, Bentora, space people! But here, it's like, this is the Church of Scientology of sorts, and we're going to take this very seriously. So, I don't want to say I was turned off by it, but I was just kind of like, this feels like this should be in a different anime.
Yeah, it felt weird to me, because I'm like, alright, a cult, that sounds fun, and I don't know, it like, literally, it was a twist to me, because I was just not thinking that it would at all go in that direction.
Right.
And that was just so awkward, like that, until like the end
awkward.
Of that episode.
Yes. Like I said, if it was done in a more comedic fashion, it would have fit in with what Golden Time has been about so far. But when that was thrown in the way it was presented, like, I was feeling more antsy in my seat than I was being entertained.
It was just a little bit shoehorned in there. I think they were trying to go for a little bit of a more serious tone. But I think that if they had gone the comedic measures in the beginning of that episode, I think the serious tone they had later with the talk between those two would have been just as fine. I mean, I thought that talk was really serious and but really, really fitting between the two of them.
Well, when they reveal about Tada's amnesia, here's the thing about how they chose to reveal it. I feel like that they shouldn't have talked about it at all until the third episode. Like, if they had done it in such a way where when he was first into talking about it at the cult, revealing, oh, I've lost amnesia, I don't know who I am, and everything like that, and then took a look at Kaga, like, kind of hinting, oh, this is his plan to rescue everybody and have him leave the building.
Yeah, he basically became like a martyr in that situation almost, because he was like, all of you don't understand. This cult is religion, whatever it was called. This is something that I need, and we should just get rid of everyone else because they're obviously not committed.
And then what they should have done is, and then during the talk after they escape, like Kaga should have said something like, "Oh, that was a great plan, by the way, coming up with that story." And then Tai would have been like, "Actually, no, that was true," and that should have been like the what sort of moment of the series.
Yeah, but then, like, because, like, as you said, like, in the earlier episodes, they kind of hinted at it, and it was, like...
It kind of ruined it, in my opinion, to do it in that fashion, though.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you there. It just, I don't know, that, it just, it was awkward, and that episode, the first part of the episode was pretty sloppily done as far as that, but everything else is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, we're only three episodes into the show. But I do really like what is presenting. I do love the characters. I'm curious to see how Linda is going to be fitting into the story more. There's also one other thing that kind of really bugs me. And this is probably something that I could save for a new topic of discussion. Something where the other Wicked Anime people are going to be here. Mm-hmm. There's a part in episode 2 where they're at the Filmmakers Club welcoming party. And Tana is then dragged into the tea party, and then there's the sight of the all the guys there of sheer horror as the women are getting drunk, taking off their clothes and everything. The thing that really bugs me about that is no straight, sane guy would be horrified by that. He would be more of like, "Woo! This is awesome!"
I mean, but you're forgetting that Tada is, I mean, he's very gentlemanlike throughout these episodes. He's very, very nice and very caring. And so I think the image of women doing this and the fact that he's, you know, a freshman and not used to women doing this was probably pretty scary. But I will agree with you that some of the other dudes were, I mean, I figure that at least a couple of them would get into it, you know?
Right. I mean, it seems like a fun club. So all I have to do is drink some bitter tea and I get to watch some girls take off their clothes and go gaga crazy? Hey, sign me up.
Although the bit where they did have them wrestle was a bit awkward. just like, I wouldn't want to do that if I was a dude in a tea club and have women be like, yeah, well, wrestle him.
Well, the only reason why they did wrestle in the first place was because they said no to drinking it. If they had just first asked, wait, is this poison? If they had said no, oh, bottoms up, drink it down.
but you gotta, like, he didn't want to be there in the first place. He was like, probably everything about it was like, nope, I don't care what happens here, I'm not gonna be happy.
It's something that I've noticed in a lot of Japanese anime with guys that are just like surrounded by girls and they just look horrified by the whole thing. Like I said, this could be a total new like discussion.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
me.
Well, we'll definitely save that then. We'll definitely save that.
Yes, yeah.
But I did like I am excited how they tie in Linda with the next episode, which the next episode comes out in like a day or two, I think.
I think because we're recording this on Tuesday, so we won't know where the story is going to go from there.
Yeah, and I remember when I first saw Golden Time, I looked up all the stuff for it. And I looked up the artwork, and there's apparently another character who looks like a badass rocker chick, and I'm really excited to see how they bring her in.
Agreed. I'm very excited to see how that's going to all turn out.
Yeah, because, I mean, and you know what? The only thing that I really hope Golden Time doesn't do is, because they're kind of like, you know, doing like a little joke here and there about it, but I hope they don't actually go to that point, is making Kaga and Tada a couple.
No, I agree with you.
I don't want that.
It would really ruin the show. I feel like, all right, so an example of where that kind of, where it kind of worked, but at the same time kind of disappointed that they went with that route, was when they did that with Toradora.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that this Golden Time's by the same creator of Toradora.
Well, the same anime production company, or the actual same creator?
Creator, the person who created Toradora, created the light novels for Golden Time.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you bring it up. I'm like, well...
I didn't know that, because I know J.C. Staff animated Toradora as well, and I always love J.C. Staff stuff. Not once do I ever watch something by J.C. Staff and feel like, oh, this is probably all total fan service and everything.
No, I am 100% sure. I'm going to, like, look it up real quickly.
Yes, it is. I'm looking at it right now. It is the exact same production company, same author and everything.
Yep, I'm just like, oh, you brought up Toradora. Like, yeah, that's my worry, is because it is by the same creator of Toradora. I don't hope they don't go that route like they did do in Toradora.
Maybe, hopefully, what I'm hoping is that, all right, this is what I did with Toradora. Let me see if I can do a little bit of a more different route with Golden Time.
Yeah, I hope so too. And just a quick mention, the opening song and the animation with the opening looks taken over by a Hallmark store on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I was saying that too. I mean, why push so much of, I know it's a different complaint, but why are they pushing so much of Kaga when the focus should be more on Tana in the opening and ending?
Well, I think it's because... if you look at it so far, everything about the story, even though it's Kaga's not the focus, it does revolve around her, and she is kind of the central axis so far.
Okay.
So yeah, if you look at it maybe from that perspective, but I was like, oh, okay, Hallmark threw up on the opening. Because it's like hearts and shit everywhere. And I was like, oh, geez. This is, wow.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we put a grade on what we've seen so far, going between, when I do anime reviews, 0 to 10, what do you give for a grade so far for Golden Time?
Well, if I was going to go on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it a 7.8, because I don't feel it's there yet. And especially with the weird pacing in that third episode. But I still think it's really, really, really worth the watch. And I'm hoping it'll, really start to impress me down the line.
Agreed. I'm going to give it closer to that. I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10 so far. I'll plan to write a full-on review when it's, 6 episodes in. Because mm-hmm. I feel like 6 is usually the magic number when it comes to new anime series. When you know, okay, this is going to be worth watching.
Yeah. Well, I believe it is 12 episodes long.
Oh. So it's
but no, it's 24. No, it's 24.
Oh, good.
It's 24. Never mind. Just ignore me. It's 24. So it'll be here for a while. So it's interesting to see how long it's going to take.
Can you see yourself already doing a 42 things wrong with Golden Time video thus far?
Not necessarily, because for some reason I only do 42 things wrong with a video either if I love the series enough, or I hate the series enough, or I just think the series is funny in, a bad sort of way. But Golden Time, it entertains me enough, so where I would do, the extreme nitpicking on those types of series, I don't think about it when I'm watching the series.
Okay.
So, because when I did the Aiken one, I'm just like, I just can spot all these little nitpicks here and there. And then when I was watching Attack on Titan, it was like, I can spot all these little nitpicks here. But I genuinely have fun watching Golden Time, and I'm just like, what's going to happen next? And so I don't think I would.
Okay, all right. But still, we're only 3 episodes in, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yes, this is true.
All right, the 42 Believer, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders or Race again.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Here's our classic jam from the legendary Misfits from their album Static Age, a must-own for punk enthusiasts, is Paying for a Jam.
Drop drunk on a corner, with the
From their Blue Blood album, that was X Japan with Endless Rain. They're still working on their next album, which was announced back in 2010. I really hope it's not another Chinese democracy situation. Well, that about wraps up another episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bass Brigade, you can go to www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, or if you are in a band and would like to be showcased on No Borders, No Race, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbassbrigade.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/bostonbassbrigade. And you can also go onto our Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com. And before we end the show, before we play the last song, I just got word that the new Shinichiro Watanabe anime, Space Dandy, is going to run simultaneously on television in Japan, North America, and all throughout Asia. I'm reading this right now. It's going to be on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. It's going to be on Animax in Asia. And on Japan, it's going to be on like four different channels, because it's different places in Japan have different stations. So this is really awesome. And Funimation is doing the dub, so I'm reckoning that we're going to have the English dub already on television at the same time as the Japanese version is running on TV. This is cool. I'm very excited about this. I can't wait to see how this is going to turn out. So we're going to play one of my all-time favorite punk bands, Stunts Punks. They have a new best-of album called Stunts Punks Mania, and I'm going to be playing something from their 2010 album, The World Is Mine, which was number 3 in my best of list that year. This is Ano Musumi wa B. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.